I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the 50th edition of Just Make the Thing, a podcast for people who want to start a thing and keep on making it. I'm your host, Claire Tonti, and today I'm joined by my lawyer friend, my yoga instructing wonderkind, Chanel Luchev. It's been 50 episodes, guys. My goodness, if this is the first episode you've listened to, well, let me fill you in on just why it's so fantastic. In episode one, I never thought that I would get to episode 2, let alone 50 episodes. This show has taught me so much and I've met so many wonderful people through it as well. I've got to listen to people I admire talk about how to make things and why they keep on going. I've learned about resilience and consistency and imagination and ideas. And I think the biggest thing I've learned is that I'm not alone in that feeling I had, in that stuckness, which I seem to always land in. And what really has happened in just making this one thing and keeping on going with it, I've somehow unstuck myself and have started making lots of other things that I never thought that I would. So I wish that for you, dear listener, whoever you are out there, that you get unstuck, get out of your head and just make something. It's more about the process I've learned than necessarily the outcome. That comes with time. The outcome improves the more that you make. But if you don't make, you'll never see that. So thank you for listening for 50 episodes. And here's Chanel and I talking all about it. Okay, on with the show. Hello and welcome to the inaugural 50th episode of Just Make the Thing.
We made it.
We so far have had celebratory jaffles slash falafel.
Oh, it was excellent.
It was really excellent. And we are sitting on Chanel's couch in her house, so it's nice and quiet, looking at the bamboo on her balcony because her husband has decided that they need a lot of bamboo.
It's his new DIY project.
It's a jungle out there.
It is.
Legitimately, like figuratively and legitimately, or whatever the words are, there is a jungle out there in the world and also on Chanel's balcony. But we have made it to 50 episodes.
I can't believe it.
Which back when we started in June, I would never have thought. Actually, we started before. We started not actually putting them out, but recording in December of 2016.
Oh, my goodness.
We certainly did. Do you know why? Because the first episode we recorded was when Trump got elected.
He's been around for that long.
Certainly
has. There's been no impeachment to take him down.
No. What a merry ride we've had.
Oh, what a ride.
What a ride. But, yeah, we never released that episode, but we definitely did start recording then. Mm. So I cannot believe that we've released 50 episodes.
I can't believe it happened. I mean, I know it's been, effectively, a year and
a half or something.
But I feel like 50 episodes should have taken us a lot longer than it has.
Yes, in some ways, and then in other ways, we could have probably done it in 6 months. So
possibly.
Take that how you wish. Yeah. I don't know. I think that because last year we were sort of releasing, I was releasing quite sporadically, but this year in March, bam, every week without fail.
Yeah.
Which I reckon for you as a person who once they start something continues it forever is probably quite great. For me, it's so unusual to actually have followed through with something for this long.
Yeah, you've said that, but I think
– quite impressive, really. You should be patting yourself on the back.
Thanks, mate. So with that, I wanted to take you on a journey, Chanel.
Oh, good.
I wanted to take you on a journey back to where we started because I have been listening to some of our old episodes and been reflecting on our time
before
Just Make the Thing. Sorry if this is the first episode you've listened to. Probably go back. There's many episodes, a plethora to listen to beforehand. Probably our first one is a good place to start. A very good place to start. If it's something that's a song from Sound of Music.
What is
– I think.
Oh, yeah. When you sing You Begin With Do Re Mi.
Yes. When you read You Begin With ABC. When you sing You Begin With Do Re Mi. Anyway, the last three notes. I'm sorry.
We're going to get a whole song from you.
Yeah. Oh, mate. Amazing. I could definitely sing you a whole song. Mm. No. So I wanted to go back to reflecting on our time because when we started, you in your Just Make Thing world were just sort of starting your yoga course.
Yes.
Weren't you?
Yes.
While you were still working in a job that you hated.
Correct.
And you got photocopying sweats. Do you remember that?
I do.
And you were really hating your job and really not sure what you wanted to do, and you thought that maybe you'd actually become a yoga teacher.
Yes.
And that was kind of the reason why you started it.
Yes.
So there you go. And I had never followed through with anything creative for longer than like 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, you had led you'd led a choir and sang in a band and started a book club, which never went anywhere.
Well, a year, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
It went for a year.
That's pretty good. That's longer than I thought.
Yeah, to be fair. It did go for a year, but it was quite sporadic.
Okay.
And I stopped reading the books halfway through.
Okay. So how did you discuss the content then?
We ended up just drinking a lot of tea and eating chocolate at the end of it. The beginning was great, as usual. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did. I did a lot of those things.
Yeah.
Like sort of half starting things. I wanted to ask you with this podcast, what do you reckon from the beginning till now, what has it taught you over that whole time?
That is an excellent question. I think that it is important in life to set creative goals for yourself, goals generally, but not to adhere too steadfastly to those goals and what they should look like because I was not, as you said, not a happy camper in my job. And I was like, I know, I'll do my course and then I'll quit my job and then I'll start my studio and everything will be fancy and wonderful and it'll be like being in The Sound of Music except a yoga version.
In yoga pants.
Yes, in yoga
pants. In lycra.
Exactly. And then do you remember that there was a point in time where I was like, have I made the biggest mistake of my life?
Certainly remember that. When you were like, what have I done? And you got really existential about the whole point of yoga to begin with and how everyone's just commercialized and no one has any heart and you'd be just catering for these rich people who are competing with each other.
Yeah, and on some level I still believe that to be true. But – and I think we've discussed this – holding two opposing truths in your head is possible the more you get to understand something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the part of me that still believes that it does some amazing amount of good for yourself and for the world around you and for people generally. And it's lovely to be in a space where you can do – you can perform a service for someone and it really makes them just so happy. Like, and there've been times where I've had classes where people come out of their like shavasana, like their meditative state, and they're just in this state of bliss and peace. And they'll say things like, you've just really made my day. I was really stressed and now I'm not. Thank you. So, and that's just beautiful. And it just fills my heart and like makes me want to cry and all that stuff. And then I also take classes and I'm like, oh, there are all the beautiful, muscular, sweaty people again. Not a hair on their head. Actually, there's many hairs on their head. Not a hair in places that it shouldn't be, right?
Yeah.
So there are those two opposing ideas in my head about it being all embracing but also being commodified. And with that, I guess I've struggled with what it is that I actually want to do with this thing that I decided to take on. And I still don't know, and I'm okay with that. I think
that's big for you.
Yeah.
That's big that you're okay with not knowing where it's going to go, right?
Well, when you came up with the tagline for this, like how to start a thing and keep on making it, I think the thing that I have to keep reminding myself is just to keep on making it, like just to keep on doing it. And whether it evolves into something entirely different is actually all right. It's not a sign of success or failure. I think the success is just like just keep going as long as I keep going. So I had this goal. I wanted to become a teacher. I am a teacher. And while the aspirational yoga life I had for myself has not worked out the way that I thought it would, like it's actually fine because there's a whole bunch of other stuff I've learned and a whole bunch of other opportunities that have come along which have been
equally as interesting and rewarding and sort of part of my journey, as you like to put it.
So journey.
And what about yourself? What have you learned?
Oh, well, thanks for asking, Chanel. It's an interesting. It's interesting that I asked you a question and you reciprocated. Yeah. It's almost like we're good friends.
Yeah.
And we're having a reciprocal conversation. Yes. You know, it is actually quite hard to teach that skill. Sometimes people don't understand that in order to be a nice human person, you ask a question and then someone reciprocates and that's how you listen to each other. Some people aren't good at it. You, my friend, are good.
Thank you.
At it. No worries.
Thank you.
Anyway, side note. Yeah, so I have been just incredibly blown away, and it's exactly what you were saying just then, that what I have learned about making a thing, at the beginning I would be so uptight and emotionally invested in whatever I decided to do to the point where I couldn't separate myself from it, and I would almost be heading into whatever project it was with this inevitability that I would fail at it somewhere out of the gate, that it wouldn't be good enough, that it reflected everything that I am, and then it would just reflect back to myself how much I sucked at doing stuff. I know, and that's so intense, right?
Yes, like, it's a little dark.
I know. It's super dark. For someone, I'm quite a chipper person.
Yeah, but exactly.
But that was this weird part of me, and I do not have any idea where that came from. I think I'm definitely not alone in that, though, in starting this. There have been so many emails and messages I've got from people who said the same thing, that they're kind of stuck. A guy wrote on Twitter the other day to me about how he hasn't felt like himself for so long because he hasn't been able to create, and then listen to our podcast and other things, he started writing again.
Oh, that's wonderful.
He doesn't even really mind whether or not it becomes anything, but it's the process.
Yeah.
And that to me is the biggest thing I've learned, that exactly right. It may not go in the direction that you thought it would, but the process of just showing up for yourself and putting out something, like that whole saying, something is better than nothing, nothing, has just changed so much for me and opened me up to be less afraid of making other stuff. Because even like I've got to interview all these really fascinating people who make things I admire, and or just have kind of interesting life stories that have enabled them to keep going with things.
Yeah.
And I've learned so much from them as well. But the overarching theme is always, you just pick yourself up and you keep on going. Like, you keep making it, whatever that is. If making it means you keep showing up to your job, or you keep eating well or exercising, or you fail, you just get up again. And then it's actually also not that big a deal. Like, you can be doing a podcast, but you could also be, I don't know, running a marathon, or you could just be making like cupcakes or something.
Yeah.
And it's the process of repetition and learning that is the thing. I think I was always in a rush. We talked about that a lot actually over the time, that we're often in a rush. Like, once you start a thing, you want it to be done and perfect and it's there in like a couple of weeks or immediately, like on the night. Like, I want my house to look completely different. So here I go. I'm at wherever I'm, Bunnings. I'm going to buy all this stuff and it'll suddenly look different and excellent. And what I'm learning, and maybe it's getting older, but I think it's also this podcast has taught me that you can't be good at something initially, like really good at something initially. You have to spend lots of time on it, just making it. And each iteration of it will probably be pretty terrible initially, but just the sheer act of doing something every week has meant that I'm writing now. Like, I've got this silly, it's not silly actually, I shouldn't say silly, but it's just that writing project I'm doing on Instagram, where I just set myself a goal, because I've always written stuff in diaries and journals. Mm-hmm. And so over years, and I used to love writing as a kid. That was the thing I wanted to be, a teacher or a writer as a kid. And so I know a lot of people are the same, like have a journal and scribble notes in it, or shopping lists and all that kind of stuff, and put it in the notes in your phone. But even just like a bit of poetry and, or, you know, just writing. I've always done bits and pieces of it to make sense of the world for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. I've just been doing it over the course of time. But I decided a couple of weeks ago that, maybe a week ago, just over a week, that I just write something every day and post it on Instagram. And I've just got like scribbles in my notebook, and it's, my handwriting is terrible, and I'm taking photos of it and then just writing a tagline underneath it. But the act of doing it, it's the same as the podcast. It's just doing it and not minding that it's not perfect.
But just the act of doing it over time improves your skill at something to the point where you can build up to do something else.
And do you think, because it's interesting, you've sort of said you've set yourself this challenge that you're going to do a particular thing. Do you think as humans it's somewhat necessary in order to kind of explore our creativity that we need to have at least some, even if it's a loose form, like some kind of routine built into our lives? So if you want to be successful at something, that you need to make room in your life for it, and routine sort of maintains, kind of propels that forward.
100%. I reckon routine and doing it more than whether or not you give it your all each time. I reckon it's the consistency, like Michelle Bridges would say that, or other, you know, with exercise and health. I reckon that is one of the keys to life, you know. We've nailed it. We don't need to say anything else. We've nailed life now.
That is the meaning of life, everyone. You heard it here first.
Consistency, guys. That's it. That's it. Don't worry about your Buddhism. Don't worry about your religions or your chakras.
I think that is like 100% true, because even just applying it to the like my own practice, my asana practice that I have committed to 3 days a week since the beginning of the year. Do you remember how I set myself like 5 New Year's Eve? I think I called them, what did I call them? Not resolutions. I called them something else because I didn't want to call a resolution.
Is this when you sat around in a circle and like lit things on fire at the beach and all cried in a circle?
No, but different? I did do that, and that was also excellent, and cathartic, and probably long overdue. But I'd set myself like a whole bunch of New Year's aspirations or some nonsense, and the only one I've stuck to is, unless I've been sick, like, and probably is, I'm not really in a position to sort of invert or like go or like do something overly strenuous, is to go to yoga class 3 times a week. And it's during my lunchtime, so like it's fine, it fits in well, but that's the one thing I've been managed to do. And it could be in the space of a week I might have an amazing class and feel really strong and really energized and be like, yeah, this is great, I feel so like
yoga-y,
free and open and wonderful and balanced and all that stuff. And then there are days where I'm like, why can't I stand on my left leg? It just won't stop wobbling. It just won't.
It won't stop.
So even like even with that commitment, I have established this routine, and I really will try not to break it now. But like there are days where I feel like I'm really sort of
nailing it.
Yeah. And then there are days where I am not, definitely not. And I think for us, because we make this commitment to do this thing on a Sunday, and that's when people ask me what I'm doing on my weekend, I'm like, I usually will say, oh, I podcast on Sundays. That's what I do. That's my thing. Yeah. So batch cook, make sure I – and that's not like an abbreviation for like the bachelor and, or
it
anything.
It did sound like that. Yeah. I'm like, batch cook.
Yeah. Cooking up bulk amounts of food, really, so I'm organized for the week, and tidying up, and then like podcasting, that's now part of my – weekly routine. And I think that kind of works well. Sundays work well for us.
Yeah, they do. I think they do. They're good for us and for me with my little person as well. And it, yeah, it just seems to kind of fit in. And you're right, it just has to become a routine thing. And then over time, that consistency of doing something, regardless of whether or not you're very good at it, and that, and sometimes you're really on, and sometimes even with our podcast, I'm like, we did an amazing episode. We were so organized. It was great. Woo. And other times I'm like, I don't know, what were you talking about? About to fall asleep. but the sheer act of doing it means that you get better at something.
Yeah.
And isn't that, it's just so great. Yeah. I just can't describe. And for people who just already knew this, I'm sure you're like, yeah, all over.
You're
it.
Very wise.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be asking you for advice.
Exactly. But I just think for people who were like me or are like me at the beginning of this podcast, it does almost seem so revolutionary that there's something that you just have to do consistently, but it's so small, it's so simple but hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's like that feeling I was trying to describe to someone of being a part of a basketball team, and sometimes your game's at like 10 o'clock at night and you don't want to be there and you're like, bleh, it's cold, blah. But because there's other people there, you have to show up.
Yeah.
And you just do it, and then you're in, and then 8 weeks later, or however long the basketball season is, you're in the grand final and you're like, oh, Well, and not that that's ever happened to me, because I am really bad at basketball. But you know, you're in the finals, or it's finished, and you've made or done something. Mm. But it is that just consistency of having to show up that this podcast is, and it's led to all these other stuff. Like I'm writing more, and I'm making and cooking and gardening, and even gardening. Like for me, has been that same process of understanding that because I was bad at something the first time I did it, does not mean I'm actually bad at it.
No, of course not. Of course not. I think generally if you do something like and you are, and it works out perfectly, I feel like that's luck more than anything else.
Yeah.
Or all you're doing is following something that someone else has previously perfected.
Mm.
So to be like genuinely good, you actually need to keep working at it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah. So interestingly, for consistency is important, routine is important.
Mm-hmm.
But for someone like me who loves routine to the point who is like dogmatic about routine and also has these weird aspirations, unnecessary aspirations of perfection, I think if anyone is anything like me and you always want something to be a certain way, like, and learning to let go of the fact that it is not going to be like that and that the world will keep turning and it's going to be all right. It's a good lesson.
Yeah, it is good. Just have a friend like me
who exactly.
Like says she'll turn up at 12 and comes here at 2. Or, you know. Yeah. I guess that's the thing, isn't it?
Mm.
It like I've learnt so much from you.
Yeah, I've learnt a lot from you too.
Thanks, mate. Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah, it has been good. Mm. If nothing else, and no one is actually out there listening to this, it's been good for us.
We've had a great time.
We've had a ball. 50 episodes. It's been amazing. Yeah, it is. It's been, yeah, really funny. That's been my favorite bit, actually, just getting to hang out with you more.
Yep.
Yeah, because you're real cool.
Yeah, you're cool.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I am. I'm so cool. I'm so cool that my hair is wet because my hair dryer broke this morning.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know. It's on its last legs. It's like 10 years old.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, I know. It sort of was smelling a weird smell, but I was ignoring it. And then it literally just didn't turn on today. And I was like, okay, fair call. It's been real hair
dryer. I've been trying to warn you, Claire. I'm about to die and you're not listening to me.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it finally happened.
Oh, boy.
I know. I was reflecting too just about all of the episodes that we've done and how when you get little snapshots of your life and you record it, how interesting it is that your sort of perspective on your life and what you've created changes so much depending on the mood that you're in or the life events that have happened around you. And it just blows me away that like this has only been a year of our life or whatever, or a year and a bit. What's going to happen in the next year?
Oh, my goodness.
Or the year after, or the 10 years.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. One thing I wanted to ask you about, which has changed for me in this whole year, this evolution of my thinking around feminism.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like maybe it's Donald Trump, because as we started recording, he got elected. Has your perception of what feminism means and being a feminist changed, do you reckon, over this course of time?
Well, I think, do you know, honestly, I think I've always had, well, this is going to sound strange, but I've always had the urge, the feminist urge, to discuss those issues which I believe to be important. But for some reason, and I can't quite put my finger on it, I feel like it's been suppressed or something. And so what has been interesting is that I've been able to talk your ear off about this stuff and you're so happy to talk about it too.
Mm.
So I feel less weird about caring about things that are happening to other people in the world and like getting enraged about it, even though it often has very little relevance to me at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, I might be bringing them up at the wrong time of the evening when everyone else is relaxing and trying to have drinks and then I'm here talking about patriarchy. It's probably not a good idea. So, you know, timing is everything.
Yeah. With me, any time of day. Dinner, lunch, breakfast.
Do you remember actually at your birthday the other week when I was talking to you about the Kardashians and I can't remember what it was and you were like, I need to talk about this because I can't believe how sexist they are and they just encourage the patriarchy. And I'm like, I love that I have a friend that will bring up at her own birthday drinks patriarchy and its effect on society. I was like, oh, this is why I love her.
It's wonderful.
But I think the thing, so I don't know whether so much is it's been suppressed, whether it's changed, but I definitely think on some level it was like it was suppressed, and now I feel like I almost have license to revel in it a little. Mm. And what I have been doing is listening to all sorts of content, podcast content specifically, on a whole range of feminist issues. And I think it's opened my eyes a little bit. Mm. So I'm like, wow, yeah, why don't they have proper, like, purpose-built pockets in women's clothes? And what is the deal with high heels? And goddamn it, hair is so annoying.
Yeah, exactly. We could all just have it short. I went on this, like, I totally agree. That's what's changed for me too, listening to pop feminist podcasts like The Guilty Feminist or Chat 10 Looks 3. Mm. Or I'll look the Mamma Mia out loud, or, you know, any of those. I totally agree. Reading stuff as well, and you suddenly go, ah. Or people I follow on Instagram, like Glennon Doyle or someone.
The penny drops.
Yeah, the penny just drops. Mm. Actually, there's a brilliant article that one of my friends, Elle, sent me from the Millennial Divide, actually. Mm-hmm. It's an article by an activist called Jane Caro in Australia, who, if you've never seen her, she's an amazing person to follow on Twitter. She is just an advocate for women and for teachers and for nurses, and she's always sort of out there fighting for equality and for better care, for healthcare, better funding, better superannuation. You know, she wrote this great piece on feminism and how young women don't need feminism. And so they don't really awaken to feminism because they think everything's fine and equal until maybe they get married or they start to have kids.
Yeah.
And then what they thought was equal, suddenly the world, the ground shifts beneath them and they realize, oh, hang on, I'm having to look at how much childcare costs and whether it's worth me going back to work part-time. Mm. Then I've got less superannuation. Oh, hang on, I'm the one caring for my aging parents and other people in my life. Oh, hang on, my income is going down because I'm also taking on a caring role for, you know, children or whoever else. And you suddenly looking at your partner and the way your body changed during pregnancy, and you're looking at your partner who's just sailing on through, you know, obviously a dad, being a dad is also complex, but their body doesn't change. Most men's work habits don't change much. They might go on paternity leave for a couple of weeks and whoop, that's it. And suddenly you realize why these older women that you thought were like angry and bitter are actually just raging because they've lived through a generation where, like, they've lost a whole lot of this stuff that they didn't have. And
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
We've got more rights than we've ever had really now, but there's also a movement trying to take those away. And
yeah.
And I that's why, for me anyway, I never thought feminism was much of an issue. I was kind of about it in high school, and then early 20s, I was like, everything's fine. Mm. Everything's equal. It's totally fine. And then I realized, yeah, as you get older, things change. But anyway, I'd highly recommend that article. It's in The Age today.
Okay. Mm. That is fascinating. I was just going to say, with all of that stuff, I completely agree. But how about also throw aging into the mix?
Oh, we are aging.
Let's just add that in there. Let's just
throw that.
Put that on top of a crappy cake, shall we?
Put that cherry on that pie. Yeah. Well, yeah, because that's the other thing. I think in my head I was still categorizing myself as a young woman.
Oh, yeah.
When in actuality, I'm now 33.
And I went out last night and I realized how friggin' old I actually really am. Because all I could think was, that young woman must be so cold.
Honestly, that was the first thing that came into my head as well. I think that so often. And I also think when I look at them now, I'm like, that's the patriarchy, mate.
Yeah.
Why else are you dressed in stilts with like a tiny skirt with no jacket, and you've spent hours and hours straightening your hair and slapped on a whole lot of paint on your face to walk out with your boobs all squished into a thing that's very uncomfortable? Because you want guys to notice you, and you think that that's what we have to look like for them to notice you. And now I don't like doing that as much.
No.
I want to wear comfortable things.
Nor should you. I mean,
No.
Shouldn't we be recognized for our
intellect? Yes. Right? I remember actually. Oh my God. I just had this flashback to me as a high school kid. Oh man, I was the worst. No, I wasn't the worst, but I love myself back then.
Mm.
Well, now I do. At the time, I was just such a nerd. But I remember we went on this like tour somewhere. I think it was like a school trip to China, actually. That's right. Our tour guide, she was really nerdy. She had glasses, but she was super funny and interesting. And she took us around China and was chairing all of us, you know, telling us all about the history of the places we visited. And I had this chat with one of the girls back in the hotel room, and because she was single and she didn't have a boyfriend or anything. And I remember because we were talking to her, and she's probably only like 24, but we thought she was old because we were like 16. And she, I had said to them, yeah, but she's so smart and funny. Like, surely she'll find someone. And all the girls looked at me and looked at each other and giggled. I'm like, oh, Claire, that's not what it's about, is it really?
Oh.
And at the time, I still distinctly remember that by being like, oh, okay.
That's just
so it's not enough to be smart and funny. You have to be. And she wasn't like unattractive, but she was obviously a bit nerdy.
Yeah.
With glasses and things. But it just – yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that thing. I just hadn't thought about that before.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because don't you think also you and I mean before – well, I mean even now the jobs that we've chosen are not ones that encourage sort of the aesthetic so much as like the intellectual. Like we both did. You went into teaching. It's the same thing. They're like, you know, well, look how wonderful you can look in your classroom. It's like how well can you teach? How well can you –
can you talk?
Can you talk?
Yeah.
Can you communicate with kids? Can you get them to be responsive and manage all their emotions and all their other issues? And for me it's like how well can you articulate yourself so you don't sound stupid, you know, which is most of my job at the moment. But even in these jobs which we have chosen, which are historically intellectual professions, and I would say even in what you're doing now, it's an intellectual profession.
It's definitely not visual.
No. Until we develop a YouTube channel?
Yeah, well, we are currently building a studio out the back of my house with cameras. That's my worst nightmare though because I have wet hair currently. I would much prefer an audio medium. Continue anyway. Yeah, so you were saying we've chosen intellectual
Even in this – even in like Western society where there's this deemed equality and we have been able to work in jobs where theoretically – the only way that we're supposed to be judged is by our intellect and our ability to sort of perform a task, do a job. We still, all that stuff, ageism and beauty and
sexism
and being caring, placating other people, that still comes into play in some way, shape or form.
Absolutely.
Like I was having a discussion with one of my other colleagues. He's also a like a board secretariat, and I was like, oh, we finished our we finally published our report and I'm so happy. It's literally taken a year to do it, and I can't even tell you how many iterations of this damn report I've written and how many commas I've had to remove in place of semicolons, and you know, my life is just grammar right now and I'm so happy that it's over. And I was like, oh, we're having a board meeting in 2 weeks. I really want to do something special to commemorate it. I was like, and my first thought was like, maybe I should bake something. And I was like, at first I was like, yeah, that's a great idea, Chanel. And then I was talking to my colleague and she's like, well, she's a fantastic baker because she has like a whole bunch of allergies, so she has to be really particular about what she makes, but everything she makes is delicious. And she's like, yeah, I thought about doing stuff, but then I think, will the committee get confused about what my actual job is? Because I am not hired to like serve them food. I'm hired to provide a service, but not that kind of service.
Yeah.
And then I kind of got mad at myself because I was like, why would you think to bake something? God damn it. Like you've been hired in a legal capacity to do a legal job and you want to bake for the committee? What message is that sending, you know? Part of me also was like, but you like to bake and food's delicious, so shut up. So
I know, and that's the other flip side of it, isn't it? Because also you've got that second wind with baking too.
Yeah.
And it's a nice thing to do and you do want to celebrate.
Yeah.
And it's not that women shouldn't be allowed to do that or people shouldn't be allowed to bake and celebrate. But there is kind of this connotations of women get the tea and women make the place nice. And to be fair, I like tea and I like making places nice, but that's not all I'm there for.
Exactly.
Mm.
And to retaliate, which was ridiculous because I'd only had this conversation with my colleague and not talked to anyone else about it. But at the next meeting that was held, I didn't even bother to get anyone a glass of water. But I'm like, well, that's awful. That's just completely impolite. Like the least that you can do is have a jug of water available. Don't pour it for the people. But I was like, there's some empty glasses. They'll figure it out.
I love it. You just tapped your foot, then you're like, they'll figure it out. But the thing is, most guys don't even bloody think about it. Mm. And they probably wouldn't even have the freaking glasses of water there to begin with.
No, no.
And people would just get
and
their
no
own.
No one noticed, mind
no,
you.
No, but that's what I mean. That's what I mean. And guys just don't have that same need to placate and make everyone happy. But then again, I also think that's strength. I do think there's an argument for rather than acting more masculine in the workplace because that's seen as more powerful, actually I've started to think that my feminine characteristics, this is a generalization, but my ability to want to make people happy, to want to cater, to want to nurture, to want to have places clean, have lots of light in places, care about atmosphere and all of those things is a strength and does not mean that I cannot also have an intellect and actually contribute in an academic sense. And sometimes I do think there's this line that we need to walk where you don't want to be taken advantage of and just thought, well, this person will always do that. So I'll just – because guys often don't even think about it in the workplace, about those sorts of qualities. But I do think there are strengths too, and not to be ashamed of them or feel that we can't express ourselves the way we want to in workplaces as well.
And we are also complex beings and you spend so much of your time at work – like what's wrong with like bringing a little bit of your own personality into your workspace?
Bit of pizzazz.
Well, just like
a bit of curly hair.
Yeah, a bit of something. So because we are unique, you know, we're all snowflakes.
We are.
So like why not be able to bring a part of yourself into your job? Like that's how you also build team strength and camaraderie and trust and relationships and communication and all sorts of things as well.
Yeah. Yeah, like the glue that holds something together. Yeah. I know, for instance, and I'm sounding very sexist, but I know if I walk into an all-male home, like if there's a whole lot of flatmates that all live together that are blokes, it's big generalizations, things are different and, you know, there are different personalities. But generally, if you walk into an all-male office and or an all-male, you know, institution somewhere, there is this feeling of like not a lot of care taken with the atmosphere or the kind you know what I mean, the cleanliness standards, the way that, you know, people wear whatever they like, the stuff they wear even. And it can be quite drab and a bit like, I don't want to be in a place like that. I want to be in a place that's got a bit of life and a bit of hominess and a bit of color and, you know, atmosphere. And I think that stuff matters too. And so I think women often, and this is generalization, not all women are into any of that or even care about it, but I don't think we should feel that we shouldn't be able to do that. I think that's why co-ed workspaces are actually really great, because if you've got a balance of men and women, then all of the strengths of both kind of come together and you would hope that it works a bit more cohesively.
Yeah. I think so.
It should, right? Yeah. What I find fascinating, I've been following the Dr. Christine Blasey Ford allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. Have you been following all of that? Yeah.
I actually listened to a feminist podcast about that a couple of days ago. So there you go.
There you go. Super interesting, right? And that's a whole nother kettle of fish that women coming forward. You know that only 5% of women who come forward or the majority of people who come forward about sexual assault or abuse are lying.
I actually do know about a little bit about sexual assault stuff, because in first year law school we did like a whole section on sexual assault specifically and how it's gendered, and they talked about the specifics and the statistics and how many reports, like of all the things that happened, how many actual police reports there are, of all the police reports, how many charges are actually brought, of all the charges that are brought, how many convictions there are, of all the convictions, how many actual sentences there are, and the percentage just gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller. And it's almost like you have to have some really very blatant, very clear, open, witnessed by other people, serious form of damaging, physically damaging sexual assault to get any kind of result in the justice system. So it is a bit scary.
It is scary. Mm. And what I thought was also scary was that when you looked at the panel of the Senate who was sitting there behind her while she, or in front of her, I should say, while she was giving her statement, it's just all men.
Oh, yeah.
All blokes. And I just think, I think about the church and all the corruption and the sexual abuse allegations in the Catholic Church and other big institutions all run by guys.
Yep.
And I'm not saying in any way, I love men. I think men are wonderful. I know so many good men. The problem I think lies too, if you have too many men and no women anywhere in leadership, in power, in institutions, then a lot of the care, the heart, the perspective, the protection for women and children just doesn't become an issue as much. There's not our voices are just not represented. Those with disabilities, those of different races are not represented. Yeah. Therefore, policy or protections for those people are just literally not put in place because there's no one there to go, hey, what about?
You know? Oh, 100%.
And so I don't know how we got onto this, but I was reflecting a lot on all of that. And though we don't live in America, what that woman, Christine, must have gone through and what her family are going through for her to stand up there to say what she said, which I just couldn't – when you see her give her statement, you think she has sacrificed so much. There is no way that she does not believe absolutely in what she's saying.
Mm.
You wouldn't do that. There is no way you would sacrifice all of that if you were making it up. You just wouldn't, of all of the fear and all of the kind of loss of privacy that she's gone through. So, it did again just make me think about feminism in general and how – the only way that we're going to change things for women and attitudes for women is for more of us to keep talking and speaking up and saying things and getting into those positions of power somehow. And that's something that I've really come to realize through this podcast and over the last year that, like we were saying in our last episode, we were like, we need more diversity, but I don't want to be in government. Oh, no. I think more women should be saying things, but I don't want to say anything. You know, like someone has to be the representation.
Yeah, exactly.
And so,
as long as it's not me, I will sit here and nod away like it is no one's business.
I'll record a podcast. Don't get me wrong. But that's the thing. I that's something that is a continued work in progress for me anyway that I'm thinking about. Oh,
absolutely. And I mean, I think you can only do what you can do as well. I think sitting here and becoming so overwhelmed by the inequity, like it also doesn't help in the long term. So it's kind of like, okay, yes, I'm not in a position where I'm making the decisions of world leaders or even community leaders at this stage in my life, but at least I'm talking about the issues that I think are important, and maybe there's someone out there that's contemplating doing it that might have the impetus, get the impetus to do it. Yeah. Because, you can't be all things to all people all the time. It's just not possible.
No, you can't. You can't be. And you also can't do everything at once. Like, hopefully, fingers crossed, we've got quite a many years left. Maybe in 10 years' time when we've done like, 500 episodes or something, that we will suddenly think differently, and or who knows what position we'll be in that length of time.
And I think the other thing, actually, interestingly, that I've learned from this podcast is, A, women make amazing things. So many of the women that you've interviewed, I'm like, they just do so many amazing things. They're so amazing. That's so cool. Like, I think even talking about the fact that I do a podcast with other people just on sort of a general daily level allows them to open up, and you learn so much about people. You see a different side to them, and it makes the world so much more interesting to me. Oh, so like, oh, that's really cool. Like, and then they'll say, oh, actually, I've been, you know, wanting to learn the cello, or I really have been meaning to write for so long, or I'm thinking of doing this thing, or like, in fact, I was talking to my good friends from work about this. And she said, because she was like, oh, I love listening to you and Claire every time you guys talk. Aww. I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. And she said, oh, I've been thinking about taking this course and I think I'm going to do it now. And I wasn't going to before because, you know, I never really have enough money and I should be saving. But I just figure, like, I really want to do it and it's going to build on this skill base. And I was like, that's awesome. You know, good for you. I'm really happy for you.
Mm.
So I think, yeah, there's something about even talking about the fact that we're encouraging people to explore their creativity allows you to be more open to other people and just see so many more dimensions to them.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. Because I think that what I'm learning too through this show is that your creativity is actually the same as your humanity.
Mm.
I'm so wise. I'm like a guru.
You are so wise.
Do you know what I mean though?
Yeah.
Like it's like with your husband Goran and like his meat rubs and his bamboo out the back and he's cooking. And it's like with you, with your yoga, there's something, it doesn't have to be your job or your main source of income or anything, but the thing that you love to do, there's something about your spark and your energy, something that gets, there is something in everybody that gets them going, whether it's like, I don't know, making their own sausages or if it's like recording themselves on a microphone. or interviewing people or writing or whatever it is. But, yeah, and then you see this dimension of someone that isn't about, which often what people talk about a lot is judgment.
Yeah.
Like judging other people or just general discussion of other people, what people are up to or the footy or global events, which are all really important too. But there is something really cool about finding the thing that someone's nerdy about.
It's like they come alive.
Right. It happens. That's what I mean by their humanity. It's like a spark.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's wonderful.
It's so cool.
It was my favorite thing about teaching. I keep going back to that. Mm. And I don't teach anymore in that way, but that was my favorite thing is finding what brings kids alive.
Yeah.
And then letting them discover that. You know, and each kid that I've ever taught has had something that they have just loved. And whether they're in prep and it's Ninjago, like little figurine things, or whether it's reading or they love making pasta sauce with their nonna or whatever it is, but they're so much more free in finding it. And I sometimes think adults need some help getting back to it.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, well, we tend to suppress it, don't we? Sometimes.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like you're trained or we're geared to think that there are certain levels or certain kinds of things that are worth discussing, certain goals that are worth aiming for, and the rest of it is kind of just sort of incidental.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Because it's quantifiable. Like,
yeah.
It's like we're kind of success orientated.
Yeah. Well, But even the idea of what success is, like I've really rethought that in the last little while as well. I was talking to a friend of mine about this a couple of weeks ago and she really wants to have kids and it's just – it's when you get to your 30s, if anyone is – not I'm going to have a discussion about fertility, but you realize how statistically improbable it is to actually fall pregnant and have a child. It's really difficult and she's struggling with that a little bit. And she's like, I just thought at this stage of my life I would already have kids by now.
Mm.
And I was like, well, you know, like isn't it interesting when we're sort of – and not everyone's like this, but I certainly was that I believed at the age of 25 I'd be married, at the age of 26 I'd have a home, at the age of 27 and 28 I'd have my first and second child, you know. And at this age, you know, a lot of those things have not happened and it's so fine because I've had so many amazing life experiences. But we set up in our mind what we believe to be the most perfect life for ourselves and then it doesn't work out exactly the way that you think it does. And if you hold too steadfastly to those ideals –
of what success is meant to look like, it can be gravely disappointing.
Mm.
And so the things that actually give you the joy are the things that are all these other incidental things that happen along the way.
Yes.
And then you find it and you're like, this is awesome. I enjoy this so much. This makes me happy.
Yes.
You know.
100%.
And sort of like learning to let go a little bit of what conventional success actually looks like.
And the lie, I think, that women are told that the ultimate success for us is getting married,
mm-hmm.
having a big ass wedding with mm-hmm. a big white dress,
mm-hmm.
and then having babies
mm-hmm.
and a house and a husband. And even though that's quite, in a way, you would say outdated, I reckon there's still a massive cultural thing
around
it. And that is your happy ending, and it should all happen by the time you're 30. So then you've got hopefully another like 60 years of life.
And what are you going to do because you've achieved it all?
Yeah, and also I think those things are hard. Marriage can be hard. Babies can be hard.
Absolutely.
And great as well. Yeah. They're wonderful, but they're not – nothing is the be-all and end-all. There is exactly right, all the incidental life stuff that happens on the way, and you have to, you know, yeah, finding those things, the smaller parts of joy and getting to know yourself and everything is more important than – putting all your eggs into one basket.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
Yep. Exactly. So now that we've solved all of the world's problems, we'll never have to record again. That's it.
This is our last podcast forever.
Don't say that.
No, that's not true.
No, universe. Seriously, the universe has had some crazy things come up for me this year.
I will also touch wood.
Let's touch wood
together.
Exactly. No, but I would love to sit here at our 100 episodes.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
I would love to do that. And the final thing I wanted to finish on with this episode is, what do you think your goal is for our next 50 episodes? Do you have one?
I don't know. I think it would be nice, and I don't know the numbers because you know them, to expand our audience a little bit more, because I know that you say we have a particular demographic.
Mm-hmm.
That would be nice. But really my goal is to hear from other people, because I love when they email and they write stuff on Facebook and they message us and they tell us about their stuff. It's fascinating.
Isn't it?
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's so awesome. I actually, think that too. I just love hearing from all these people around the world.
And
it's so awesome. So you can email us at justmakethingpod@gmail.com.
Yes, please do.
Yes. And or you can find Chanel at Bendigo Melbourne.
Yes, please.
Or me on Instagram at Claire20 or on Twitter at Mrs. Sunday Movies. Yeah, I would love that. Definitely. And I think I would just like us to keep going.
Yeah.
I'm excited. Just the next 50 episodes, just be consistent.
Yeah.
See what happens.
And I'm actually curious to see what the format will look like in 50 episodes time.
Yeah.
Because I feel like over the last, since episode one, there's been these slight little tweaks. I mean, we still talk the way that we talk. I don't think we can ever change.
No.
The verboseness with which we communicate. No. I don't think that's possible.
No, it's really not.
But I think there is also like there have been some slight changes which I think have made it snappier and sharper and yeah.
One of which is getting Collings to edit it.
Yes,
too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Collings has been so awesome to get him to edit it. Has been great.
Mm.
Yeah, I agree. I also think we should do a live show.
Yay!
That's my plan.
Yep.
That's the next thing. A live show I reckon would be really fun. Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, well, happy weekend, everybody out there.
Yes.
Or new week. And I hope that if you are making things or you haven't started yet, that you just start.
Yep.
Because it doesn't matter if it's good or not.
Yep. And then once you start, just keep going.
Yeah, that's it. In a nutshell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, see you later.
Bye.
Bye. You've been listening to the 50th episode of Just Make the Thing with me, your host Claire Tonti, and the wonderful Chanel Luchev. For more episodes, please subscribe in iTunes, leave us a rating and a review. We'd love to hear from you. You can also email the show at justmakethethingpod@gmail.com. And for more Australian-made podcasts from lots of comedy writers and creatives around Australia, you can go to planetbroadcasting.com. Highly recommend going over there. You can follow me on Twitter at Mrs. Sunday Movies or on Instagram at Claire Tonti, which is the medium I prefer the most. And it's still not too late to donate to our charity campaign to support women and girls around the world. We've raised over $40,000, which has just blown me out of the water and will make a huge difference to communities everywhere. So not too late to click on the link in the show notes below. Okay, next week I've got an incredible episode with Gemma Lee, an Australian female film director. She's fantastic, and I can't wait to share that episode with you either. I learned so much from her about making. So onwards, upwards. 51 episodes next week, guys. So I got to keep on making this thing, and I hope that you are too. Okay, see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.